Hello, it's Sunday, December 2nd, 2007, and I'm Eric Hufschmid. A lot of people wonder, when do we stop talking about 9/11 and Zionism and start getting rid of this crime network? That is a very good question. We've acquired more than enough evidence that Zionists are responsible for 9/11, the Holocaust, and other crimes, but unfortunately, the police agencies don't care. We've exposed the Zionist network, and we've identified a lot of their members. But exposing a crime network doesn't get rid of it. It simply means that the network is now operating in the open rather than in secrecy. The amazing refusal of the police, the military, the media, the professors, and almost everybody else to even talk about this crime network is evidence that a lot of people in leadership positions are working for this network, either because they want to or because they've been tricked into thinking that they were joining a special organization of special people who are going to improve the world, or because they're frightened, bribed, or blackmailed. What I find particularly sad is that it's very easy to get rid of crime networks. As I've mentioned before, the ordinary people could get rid of all crime networks simply by saying no to their stolen merchandise, gambling operations, newspapers, wars, drugs, political candidates, bribes, strip clubs, and pornography. Crime networks depend upon ignorant, unhappy, stupid, and mentally ill people for financial support and as useful idiots. I'm also amazed that there are so many people willing to work for this crime network. I suppose some of the members are religious fanatics who've been tricked into thinking that they're serving God, but how difficult is it to look through history and notice that this crime network hasn't done anything to improve life for anybody, not even Jews? Some members of the network are becoming extremely wealthy, but what is the network doing for the rest of the members? How can so many professors, policemen, and military leaders be so easily fooled into joining a crime gang that never accomplishes anything of value? Why can't the members see how destructive their network is? How can they think of themselves as special people when they haven't accomplished anything that they can be proud of? And why can't people outside the network see how destructive this gang is? And why can't they understand that we should stop the gang before it creates more wars and chaos? How can so many ordinary people have such intense cravings for gambling, television, pornography, and drugs that they'll give billions of dollars a year to this crime network? How is it possible that the ordinary people can be so easily fooled into thinking that Hillary Clinton or Rudy Giuliani or Ron Paul are world leaders? I think one of the reasons that this network is still in control is because most people, including some of their own members, are still falling for their tricks. Some of us also occasionally fall for their tricks. Nobody has an immunity to deception, so don't assume that they can't fool you. We can all become victims. However, by exposing their tricks, we can help people avoid becoming victims. This is why I've been spending time during the last few months trying to expose their tricks. As more people understand their tricks, their network will become increasingly less effective. In this audio file, I will show you how Zionists are encouraging self-destructive attitudes. It may seem silly to talk about attitudes, but your attitude affects what your life is. Your attitude determines whether you become a frightened victim of Zionism or whether you help us to get rid of it. Furthermore, I think the Zionists are using our schools and media to encourage self-destructive attitudes. So if you're aware of this issue, you can avoid inadvertently picking up the bad attitudes that they're promoting. A simple example of bad attitudes are the messages I see once in a while in which somebody will recommend one of my articles or audio files, but they include a disclaimer such as, "Although Hufschmid is not a Catholic, I feel it's important that you look at his information." Those type of disclaimers come from people with destructive attitudes. Consider an extreme example to understand this. Imagine receiving an email message from a person who writes, Although Hufschmid doesn't smoke crystal meth, he has interesting information about the Holocaust. People have a natural tendency to segregate according to nationality, race, religion, drug use, and other characteristics, and the Zionists take advantage of this by encouraging segregation, arrogance, and fights. Your attitude can make the difference between whether you become a productive member of the human race that the rest of us are proud of, or whether you behave just like another of the talking animals. Another destructive attitude is that most people believe that standing up to organized crime gangs is taking a terrible risk. It seems that millions of people today realize that 9/11 was a false flag operation by Zionists, but most people worry that talking about this crime will put them in danger of being fired from their job or killed. It's true that if only a few of us stand up to this crime network, that we are very likely to be killed. But if millions of people stood up, we would have nothing to worry about. This attitude that millions of people should live in fear of a group of criminals is extremely detrimental. So how do we change people's attitudes? How can we stop people from being frightened of this crime network? Even our police and military are frightened of crime gangs. And why am I not frightened of it? The reason I'm not frightened is because of my attitude. As I briefly mentioned in a document I posted years ago, the way I look at this situation is that we're all going to die at some point in time. Actually, it's much worse than what I originally wrote. Almost every one of us is going to be tortured to death, and the torture is going to go on for years. We may be tortured by arthritis, strokes, cancer, ringing in our ears, muscular dystrophy, or a deterioration of our digestive system. What difference does it make if a Zionist Jew tortures you to death, or if you are tortured to death by nature? The primary difference is that torture by Zionists is intense but short, whereas torture by nature is usually at a more mild level but over a longer period of time. The people who worry about getting killed by Zionists are fools. Almost all of us are going to finish our lives in pain, suffering, and misery. Consider the two paths in life we can take. We can live in fear of Zionism, or we can fight them. If we fight them, we risk being killed by them. But we also have the opportunity to bring incredible improvements to the world and our lives. If we can get rid of Zionism and other organized crime gangs, we have the potential of creating a world where we use our technology to create nice cities, a wonderful economy, and an amazing variety of food and other products. However, if we choose the other path and live in fear of Zionism, all we can possibly gain is a few more years of the life that we have right now. Furthermore, it's important for you to realize that hiding from Zionism doesn't guarantee that you're going to have a long life. If you think I'm exaggerating, consider the thousands of people who died during the 9/11 attack, and the thousands of rescue workers who are suffering serious health problems because they were breathing the dangerous air at the World Trade Center. Millions of other people died from wars instigated by Zionists, and thousands of people suffered from the mysterious fires in Greece and California. There have also been subway bombings in London and Madrid, and a mysterious bridge collapsed in Minnesota. Most of those victims of those crimes were doing nothing to fight Zionism, but they became victims anyway. Some people worry that they'll get fired from their jobs if they talk about Zionism. But a lot of people are going to lose their job because our economy is deteriorating and because we're wasting a lot of money and resources on war. Remaining silent about Zionism will not guarantee that you keep your job. To summarize this particular issue, almost all of us are going to be tortured to death, regardless of which path we take. And many of you are going to lose your job simply because our nation is deteriorating. You may become a victim of Zionism even if you choose to hide from them. But if you choose to fight Zionism, you have the potential for tremendous rewards. I say that only a fool would choose to live in fear and take the path that offers nothing. Furthermore, some of you may be dead or mutilated a year from now as a result of automobile accidents or cancer or strokes. So don't be a frightened child. Take the path that offers rewards. Don't be afraid to expose Zionism. Instead, consider it as an exciting adventure to a new life, and enjoy the adventure. Another example of detrimental attitudes is an email message I received the other day from the sister of Dan Wallace. I wrote about Dan Wallace last year when he died mysteriously. He's the son of a firefighter who died during the September 11th attack. Dan Wallace got involved with the 9/11 Truth Group in New York City. Last year he died during his sleep, but he was only 23 years old. It's unusual for someone his age to die for no apparent reason. I also found it rather peculiar that nobody in the so-called truth movement seemed to care about his unusual death. After he died, his close friend in the 9/11 Truth Group, Luke Rutowski, started getting a lot of publicity in this 9/11 truth movement. I wonder if Rutowski killed Dan Wallace, and in return, he was given a promotion. As you can imagine, some people think I'm getting carried away with my speculations. Some people assumed that Dan Wallace died of natural causes. Dan Wallace's sister is one of the people who wants me to stop promoting crazy speculations. She asked me to remove her brother's name and picture from my website. She said that her family has been through a lot of grief already, and she implied that my article was making the situation worse. However, the content of her message and the manner in which it was written gave me the impression that the Zionists were putting pressure on her to write the message in an attempt to convince me to remove the information about her brother's death. I assumed that those Zionists would read any message that I sent to her in response, so I responded that unless she has proof that her brother died of natural causes, his strange death might help other people realize that they must be more suspicious of these so-called truth-seekers. I also told her that either she's not Dan Wallace's sister, or the Jews are putting pressure on her to help them cover up one of their murders. I deliberately used the word Jew in my message because Daryl Smith didn't like that word. He wanted me to use such expressions as Jewish community or Jewish people. So I suppose the Zionists are sensitive to the word Jew. I also added some critical remarks about the FBI, the police, and the firemen to further irritate them. I'll put my response in the document that has this audio file so that you can see it for yourself. As I expected, my message did upset her, or it upset the Jews who were reading her email. She called me a leech. I'll let you read the message yourself. If she's under pressure by Zionists, then the people who know her should observe her to figure out who those Zionists are. The American people should come to her rescue. They should get the names, photos, and addresses of those Zionists. Her father died during the 9/11 attack, and her brother died mysteriously last year, and now she may be under pressure by the Zionists. Furthermore, if the Zionists are pressuring her to remove my article about her brother, then you should respond by passing my article to even more people. It's also possible that Dan Wallace died of natural causes, and that his sister is not under any pressure by Zionist Jews, and that she's behaving this way simply because she inadvertently picked up the destructive crybaby attitude that the Holocaust victims promote. The Holocaust victims are always feeling sorry for themselves and looking for pity, and if anybody looks into the Holocaust, they cry that the investigations will cause them more grief and suffering. It's important to realize that this crybaby attitude among the Holocaust victims is just a trick. They behave in this manner because they're trying to manipulate us, and they're trying to prevent us from looking into their precious Holocaust. They know that if we investigate the Holocaust, we'll discover that the Zionists were involved with the Nazis and that millions of Jews are lying about what happened during World War II. The attitude that investigating a crime will cause more grief to the families of the victims is very destructive, it suppresses investigations of crime, and it encourages people to get together with one another and cry like babies. It's a disgusting attitude. The only way we're going to get rid of crime is to understand why it's happening and who's doing it. We should not appease the victims who want to feel sorry for themselves. The 9/11 attack, the Holocaust, and even the Apollo moon landing are crimes that affect all of us in some manner. Many of the victims imply that we have no right to analyze or discuss the crimes because we're not victims. Actually, I agree that we don't have a right to investigate the crimes. I would say society has a responsibility to investigate the crimes so that we can expose and stop the crime networks and prevent future wars and terrorist attacks. The Wallace family might respond that Dan is their family member and that people outside their family should not speculate on what happened to Dan. But all humans are relatives of each other. If you follow your ancestry far enough back in time, you'll find out that you are related to the Wallace family, and so am I. We are all related to each other. I'm a member of Dan Wallace's family, so why can't I investigate the death of my relative? I'm also related to the victims of the Holocaust, and I want an investigation to find out if the Nazis really did kill my family members, 6 million of them, in gas chambers. I'm also related to the victims of the USS Liberty attack, and I want to find out why my family members were attacked. I'm even a member of Martin Luther King's extended family, and I want to know who killed my family member. Dan Wallace's sister might respond that Dan is her brother and that her relationship overrides my relationship to Dan, but life is not a poker game in which a sister trumps a distant cousin. Dan Wallace got involved with a 9/11 truth group, and I say we have a responsibility to look into his death and try to figure out if the truth group killed him. If the New York City police were honest and responsible, they would also investigate his death. We should also investigate whether his sister is under pressure by Zionists or whether she just has a bad attitude. If Dan Wallace was murdered, and if his sister succeeds in suppressing information about the murder, then she will be helping the Zionists cover up the murder of her brother. I don't care if the Wallace family is upset by my wondering if Dan was murdered. Almost every 9/11 truth seeker seems to be a Zionist agent, and I say we have a responsibility to figure out if these truth groups are murdering us. I didn't look into the death of Dan Wallace because I care about my distant cousin. Instead, I'm interested in knowing whether these truth groups are murdering people. Dan Wallace is not the only person to die mysteriously. And don't forget that Christopher Bolin and his family appears to have been kidnapped. I say that a society and our police have a responsibility to investigate unusual suicides, disappearances, and deaths. Let's now consider the possibility that Dan Wallace did die of natural causes. In such a case, medical researchers and health officials ought to have some curiosity as to why a 23-year-old man in apparently good health died for no apparent reason. What would you think if you had a 23-year-old son or brother who died for no reason? Wouldn't you wonder what's going on? My attitude is that a society should investigate the health problems of its citizens in order to reduce those problems. Consider the reports that autism and other disorders are increasing. If the people in our health field were responsible, they would look to see if these reports are accurate, and if so, they would study the issue to understand why health problems are increasing. There is evidence that some of our health problems are due to chemicals, such as pesticides and pollutants. There's also evidence that some chemicals are so similar to female hormones that they may be partly responsible for causing girls to develop too early and causing boys to become feminine. To summarize the issue of Dan Wallace, we should investigate his death regardless of whether he died of natural causes or murder. We're not going to improve our health or reduce crime if the victims succeed in suppressing investigations. We have to tell the victims to shut up and stop feeling sorry for themselves. Unfortunately, not many people can stand up to the victims. This is especially true when trying to understand why boys are becoming feminine. When we wonder if chemicals are creating homosexuals, we're implying that homosexuals are some type of genetic defect, and that causes many homosexuals to complain. We have to tell homosexuals to shut up and quit feeling sorry for themselves. We should investigate homosexuality and try to understand what's causing it. Homosexuality is an especially significant problem for us today because they are very easily blackmailed, and they seem to be used as tools by Zionists and other crime gangs. There is a suspiciously large amount of homosexuals in the so-called Patriot and Truth movements, and in government, and in the white supremacist and Nazi groups. I think both heterosexuals and homosexuals have detrimental attitudes towards this issue of homosexuality, and we must change our attitudes in order to deal with this problem. To understand how attitudes towards homosexuality can cause trouble, I'll give you a simple example with one of my particular characteristics. If you've seen what I look like, then you've noticed that my skeleton is about the same size as a tall 15-year-old boy. As my teenage years were coming to an end, I started to realize that my body wasn't going to become the proper size for an adult man. I could have reacted in a lot of different ways. For example, I could have felt sorry for myself, and I could have hated men who had normal-sized bodies. But instead, I wondered, what is wrong with my body? I couldn't answer the question, of course, and there was nothing I could do to change the situation, so I decided to accept what I am. I'm also bald, but I don't feel sorry for myself, and I don't hate people with hair. And I don't make any attempt to pretend that I have hair. I just accept it and deal with it. Now consider homosexuals. If I had this problem, I wouldn't hate heterosexuals, and I wouldn't feel sorry for myself. I don't wish other men were skinny or bald, and if I was homosexual, I wouldn't wish other people to be homosexual. Instead, I would wonder, why did I end up with this problem? What went wrong with my development? I suppose some homosexuals wonder why they're homosexual, but the ones who get the most publicity are the ones who promote homosexuality as an alternative lifestyle. The attitude of these homosexuals is destructive. They're not interested in understanding themselves or making their lives better. They prefer to feel sorry for themselves or hate heterosexuals or withdraw into a fantasy in which homosexuals are simply an alternative lifestyle. Many heterosexuals also have detrimental attitudes. Instead of wondering why some people are homosexual, and instead of trying to find a way to reduce the problem, many of them prefer to hate homosexuals or feel sorry for them. If the number of Siamese twins was increasing every year, would you hate the Siamese twins? Or would you wonder, why is this defect becoming more common? The point I'm trying to make is that your attitude towards life determines whether you accomplish something of value or whether you waste your life. Problems are never solved by hatred, pouting, or fantasies. Problems are solved only when we do serious research into the cause of the problem. Homosexuality is a serious defect, and we should try to understand what's causing it. If some of it is due to chemicals, then we can easily reduce the number of homosexuals by doing a better job controlling the chemicals that we produce. I think if we were to study homosexuality, we would find that only some of them are truly born with this defect, and that many, or most, are not real homosexuals. The real homosexuals will have an attraction to their own sex long before they have any idea what sex is. But some people seem to be heterosexual while young, and homosexual only later in life. I think those particular homosexuals are actually frustrated heterosexuals who have given up trying to find a spouse and decided to switch to homosexuality. To those particular people, homosexuality is an alternative lifestyle. However, rather than pretend that homosexuality is a sensible alternative lifestyle, we should be wondering why people would want to make such a switch. I think if we were to study this issue, we'd discover that human relationships today are worse than they've ever been in all of human history, and that people today are not very happy. Our technology provides us with lots of food, and we have houses that keep us warm in the winter. But technology only brings us physical comforts. Material items don't do anything for human relationships or our mind. For thousands of years, almost everybody has concentrated on improving material items, not improving our social environment. As a result, we have a lot of advanced material items, but it's debatable as to whether our social lives have improved. To get a better understanding of this concept, consider how houses and religions have changed during the past few centuries. We've developed a lot of technology to provide ourselves with glass windows, plumbing, refrigerators, and furniture. Our houses today are much more advanced than those of centuries ago. But what has improved in regards to religion? Some new religions have developed, such as Mormons, Scientology, Protestants, and Baptists. But how is this an improvement over the religions from thousands of years ago? And how has the Catholic Church improved over what it was centuries ago? The human race has acquired a lot of physical comforts, but I think people today are more lonely, frustrated, and unhappy. Some of our problems are due to deliberate sabotage caused by the Zionist crime network. They instigate wars between nations. They encourage women to rebel against men. They bring uneducated people into advanced nations in order to instigate fights between different races. And they encourage fights between different religions. Different people react to the unhappiness and loneliness in different ways. Some people become homosexual, but most people prefer to form a relationship with a dog or with the characters in television programs. Some people react by trying to become famous or wealthy. If a man chooses to become homosexual because he's become frustrated finding a woman, is he a bad person? If so, what about a lonely person who becomes best friends with a dog? America has an incredible number of pets, and they're increasing, and Americans are spending an incredible amount of money on their pets. Is this because life is improving for Americans? I don't think so. I think it's because Americans are becoming increasingly lonely and unhappy, and millions of these miserable people are reacting by using pets as substitutes for friends, spouses, and children. If it's wrong for a man to turn to another man for sex, why isn't it wrong for a person to use a dog as a substitute for a human friend? What's the difference? Both activities are unnatural. Both are symptoms of loneliness or some other problem. People thousands of years ago had pets, but the animals were not their friends. They were just animals. Today in America, the pets have become substitutes for humans. This problem has become so extreme that pets are being given medical treatment that previously only humans would get, and killing an animal is becoming equivalent to killing a human. The symptoms of loneliness and unhappiness are everywhere in modern society. Another example is that some single women pay for massages, but I don't think it's because their muscles are sore. I think it's because they desperately want somebody to touch them. What's the difference between a lonely woman paying for a massage and a lonely man paying for sex? It's the same behavior, except that men prefer sex and women prefer affection. Some lonely men buy inflatable plastic women. Most people consider this to be bizarre behavior, but how is a man with an inflatable woman any worse than a man who has a dog as a best friend? It's the same behavior, except that the dog owners cause a lot of noise and filth in our neighborhoods. Most people's attitudes are detrimental. When they're lonely or unhappy, they don't try to understand the cause of the problem, and they don't try to improve society. Instead, most people react by feeling sorry for themselves, or hating people who are happy, or looking for some way to stimulate themselves. Take a look at the people who have intense cravings for fame, sex, money, gambling, drugs, or other types of entertainment. These people seem to be enjoying life, but I think they're actually very unhappy, and their reaction is to stimulate themselves to excess in the hope that they will relieve their misery. They should be asking themselves, why do I have these absurd cravings for fame, or money, or sex? If you want more of my opinions on this issue, go to the philosophy page of my website. The reason I brought this issue up is that I think the Zionists are deliberately ruining society by encouraging bad attitudes. Naomi Wolf is another example of these Zionists. She's a Jew who had personal contact with Jesus and is now a Christian. She spent years encouraging women to hate men and feel sorry for themselves, and today she gets a lot of publicity so that she can promote her latest book called The End of America. She tries to frighten us into believing that the Bush administration is becoming another Nazi administration and will soon be putting us into secret prison camps and torturing us. Even the 9/11 truth seekers are giving her publicity. For example, on November 20, 2007, 9/11 blogger posted an interview of her. A week later, Alex Jones interviewed her and helped her to promote her book and her theory that George Bush is an American Hitler. To somebody who is truly naive, Naomi Wolf appears to be a loving Christian hero who is risking her life to warn us about the rise of another Hitler. Hopefully, all of you who visit my website can figure out what she's really doing. She's trying to put all the blame for the world's problems onto George Bush and a few other goyim. And she's trying to put herself and her Jewish friends into the position of hero and savior. She also starts a lot of her interviews by mentioning that her friend is the daughter of Holocaust survivors. Like other Zionist criminals, she loves to promote the Holocaust. You ought to watch at least a portion of one of her videos because she's another good example of how phenomenal the Zionist Jews are at lying. You can't detect any sign in her facial expressions or voice that she's lying. People like her fooled Christopher Bolin. For example, Linda Shelton seemed very pleasant and honest when I talked to her on the telephone. But when I brought up the Holocaust and the Apollo moon landing, she became bitter. If I hadn't brought those issues up with her, I never would have seen that horrible side of Linda Shelton. She's like Daryl Smith, who also has two extremely different personalities. These people remind me of the story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Incidentally, the Zionist agents give themselves away when they suppress serious discussions of the Holocaust and the Apollo moon landing. They only allow their own agents to talk about these issues, such as David Irving or David Duke. They won't allow anybody to promote me or my website. The KPFK radio station in California went so far as to put a message on their website that they won't promote Jimmy Walter's DVD because it includes some material from me. The mysterious disappearance of Christopher Bolin shows that you can't trust people simply because they appear sweet and adorable. You must be suspicious of everybody, especially Jews and people who promote the Holocaust or the Apollo moon landing. Those are the two crimes I get the most pressure to keep quiet about. Even Daryl Smith wanted me to avoid the Apollo moon landing. Speaking of Smith, I saw a message on the internet the other day that reminded me of some of the phone conversations I had with him. The person who posted the message said something to the effect that the public was hopeless and that it was causing a lot of frustration and stress in his life to educate them, and that he decided to accept the fact that this crime network is going to continue to rule over us regardless of how much we try to stop it. He said that ever since he decided to give up fighting them, he can finally relax and enjoy life again. I suppose anybody who listens to my audio files has already experienced the frustration of trying to help other people understand 9/11. We're all shocked to discover that most people really don't want to know the truth, and that trying to help them understand the problems we face is as frustrating as trying to teach arithmetic to a dog. The majority of people just don't have what it takes to deal with problems in this modern world. Some of them are educated and intelligent, but their emotions are suitable only for a primitive life in which they live in a small community, spend their day searching for food, and spend their evenings sitting around a campfire. They have serious problems coping with modern issues, such as money, credit cards, alcohol, presidential elections, pornography, organized crime, and television. Before the internet, I can understand why people would give up after a few years and either quit wasting their time or join the Zionist crime network. Today, however, the internet is allowing us to contact each other and spread information easily. As I mentioned in my other audio files, I think we're starting to beat the Zionists. Other people have also noticed that it's easier today to talk about 9/11 and Zionism than it was just a year ago. Since it appears as if we're starting to beat them, why would anybody want to quit at this point in time? Furthermore, if a person wants to quit, why doesn't he just quit quietly? Why does he post messages on the internet to convince the rest of us that our struggle is hopeless and that we should also quit? Well, I think the people who are posting those messages are Zionist agents. When an honest person becomes frustrated, he simply quits. He doesn't go on a campaign to convince the rest of us to quit also. Take a look at other activities to understand this. For example, when a person becomes frustrated in his struggle to become a professional athlete, he just quits and finds something else to do. He doesn't go on a campaign to convince other athletes to also quit. That message about quitting reminded me of some of the conversations I had with Daryl Smith, and it made me notice that Smith shows no sign of giving up. Actually, he's expanding his operation. He just started the website IamTheWitness.tv so that he can provide videos. He also just purchased more equipment. The expansion of Smith's operation won't seem strange to you until I explain some of the conversations we've had over the past couple years. Smith started doing radio shows in January 2005, and sometime before October of that same year, he complained to me that his website and radio show were not increasing in popularity very quickly. And he started asking me, why are we wasting our time and money on people who don't care? I don't know when he first started complaining, but I know that I posted an article at my site in October 2005 in which I mentioned his concerns at the end of the article. So it had to be before October of 2005. The article is called What is Zionism? During the next 2 years, Smith would occasionally tell me that he's getting tired of the struggle and that he felt like quitting so that he could get back to a normal life. He would complain that his wife doesn't like him sitting at a computer all day, and he would complain that the struggle was unpleasant and causing a lot of frustration and stress in his life. He also complained that it was ruining his health. He also complained to a certain extent on some of his radio shows. He was also worried that he would get arrested for Holocaust denial or that the Mossad would kill him. When he would bring up this issue of quitting during our phone conversations, I would respond in the same manner every time. I would tell him to take a break for a few weeks or months. We would discuss the issue for a while, and eventually he would tell me that he can't take any time off, because even though it gets frustrating, it would bother him even more to quit. I don't know how many of these conversations we had, but it seemed like they were increasing as time went on. Since they always ended the same way, I felt like telling him, "Oh, please, not again. We just went through this last month." So that brings me up to today. I stopped working with Smith on September 8, 2007. The first thing I did was to move some of the files I created for him over to my site, because I thought he might delete his site and quit. To my surprise, he didn't quit. He started announcing that his health problems were not very serious and that he wants to expand his operation. But if his health is so good, why was he telling me that his health was lousy? And if he wants to expand his operation now, why was he telling me that he wanted to quit? Well, I now suspect that all of those depressing conversations in which he told me that he wanted to stop the struggle to expose Zionism because it was ruining his life, his marriage, and his health was an attempt to get me depressed, frustrated, and disillusioned. Since I never did get depressed or show any sign that I wanted to quit, he would try again and again and again. I dismissed his depressing conversations as being due to his poor health and his emotional disorders, but now I think they were all deliberate attempts to ruin my attitude. The reason you should be aware of this issue is that you might also encounter people who try to convince you that the struggle is hopeless and that you should give up. Don't let them fool you. They're trying to become like a ball and chain around your leg. They're trying to drag you down. If somebody truly cannot deal with the stress, tell them to quietly give up and let the rest of us deal with it. Tell them they're not going to help the situation with their depressing attitude. Zionist agents are in a predicament. Their attempts to manipulate us can backfire because if we discover that they're agents, we can analyze their behavior, identify their tricks, and then warn other people about them and their tricks. Furthermore, once we expose a Zionist agent, we should consider all of the people that they've been associating with and promoting are also agents. For example, Smith promoted Dr. Sahib Muscatine Blair, who describes himself as a German who moved to England and became a Muslim. He founded the Islamic Party of Britain with several other people, such as David Pidcock, who was another person that Smith promotes. Pidcock is an Englishman who also became a Muslim. Pidcock wrote several books, such as Satanic Voices, Ancient and Modern, which is currently on the main page of Smith's website. Both Pidcock and Blair provide some interesting information, but that doesn't mean they're honest. Their information may be nothing more than bait to lure gullible Goyim over to their site and away from the honest researchers. My advice is don't trust any Caucasian Muslim. Even if a Muslim looks like an Arab, be careful because some Arabs have sold out to the Zionists, and some Arabs are actually Jews who are pretending to be Arabs. It's also interesting that the website Mathaba.net, which refers to itself as a news agency, promotes those Caucasian Muslims. They also promote Professor Chalcedosky of Global Research, Mike Rivero of WhatReallyHappened.com, Lyndon LaRouche, and Kurt Nimmo. Obviously, Mathaba.net is not a news agency. It's just another Zionist propaganda site, and it provides more evidence that those Caucasian Muslims, Pidcock and Blair, are also Zionist agents. Smith also promoted a woman named Felicity Arbanoth. She works with the website unobserver.com, which creates the impression that it's watching over the United Nations and protecting Arabs. But that website promotes such goofballs as Mike Rupert, who has fromthewilderness.com. They also promote the Trap Rock Peace Group. A woman who claims to be an expert on the depleted uranium issue is Lorraine Murray, and she doesn't have her own website, so she promotes the Trap Rock Peace Group website. Even if you don't know anything about Lorraine Murray, you should immediately realize that she cannot be trusted when I tell you that she's a regular guest on the Jeff Rentz radio show. Anybody who is promoted by Jeff Rentz should be regarded with suspicion, and anybody who appears regularly on his show should be considered a definite Zionist agent. Rentz has a list of his guests, so if you think I'm exaggerating, take a look at who he promotes. His guest list is a who's who of Zionist agents. The Zionists are inadvertently helping us by providing lists of their agents. If we can just find enough people who want to do something, we can put an end to this Zionist nightmare quickly. Another suspicious aspect of Lorraine Murray is that when Christopher Bolin traveled to San Francisco to interview a nuclear physicist, Murray would want to be at the interview. Zionist agents are always trying to watch us and manipulate us. Furthermore, she was always claiming to be low on money, so I sent her a free copy of some videos, including my own, before I realized she couldn't be trusted. The Zionists are always trying to trick us into feeling sorry for them and doing things for them. They consider themselves clever when they trick us, but what they really are is disgusting parasites and con artists. This attitude that criminals are clever is another destructive attitude. A person is not clever when he gets away with a crime. The reason is because it's much easier to destroy than it is to create. If a criminal truly had talent, he would be able to make a living in an honest manner. It takes talent, for example, to build and design a nice house, but it doesn't take talent to light it on fire. If Lorraine Murray was truly a talented scientist, as she claims, then she would be able to make an honest living. She wouldn't need to beg for handouts. The same is true with the other Zionist agents. If they're such talented people, why are they begging us for small amounts of money? The reason they beg for money is because they're not clever people. They can barely feed themselves. They're losers. They depend upon crime and handouts because they have so much trouble making an honest living. The Zionists consider themselves clever because they can start fires, murder people, deceive us, and find ways to abuse laws, but that's not talent. If the Zionists were truly talented, they would be able to solve problems that nobody else could solve, and their opinions on life would be so valuable that we would want to save them for future generations. We would also be able to see evidence of their brilliance in their personal lives and in Israel. But as I've mentioned in some of my other audio files, we don't see any evidence in their lives or in Israel that they have wonderful qualities. What we instead see is evidence that they are amazingly selfish, untrustworthy, neurotic, and parasitic. Some of them might make intelligent remarks once in a while, but before you let yourself be impressed by them, ask yourself, were they the source of that intelligent information, or did they steal it from somebody, like me? Before you become impressed by somebody, take a look at whether they were the person who created the information, or if they just stole it. The Zionists always turn out to be plagiarizers, thieves, and con artists. They're disgusting freaks, and we must find enough people who are willing to stand up to them. They're a cancer on this planet. If we can get rid of them, we can start the process of bringing about better governments, better cities, a better economy, a better media, and a better school system. Speaking of government leaders, Ron Paul was recently interviewed on television, and he claimed that we are not allowed to have a central bank under the control of the government, and that we should have competition with money. Listen to this excerpt.
Give us a sense of where you'd like to go.
Well, we should follow the law, and the law is the Constitution. The Constitution said only gold and silver should be legal tender. We don't really have clear authority to have a central bank. Jefferson and Jackson got rid of a national bank because they didn't like it. We've only had a central bank for a relatively short period of time, but we can't get rid of the Fed in a day or a week. But we could legalize competing currencies. I mean, we compete with currencies around the world all the time. But why can't we have gold and silver competing as a currency and let people save? Get the taxes off currency. You can't tax money. So there's a way to develop a competing currency under the current situation. And if people don't like the fiat currency that continually loses its value, they can opt out and start dealing in gold and silver.
Ron Paul wants his friends in the gold and silver business to have a competing currency. Does this make sense to you? Ron Paul is just another Zionist puppet. We're not going to solve our problems by swapping one Zionist puppet with another. We've got to get rid of this entire crime network. When I pointed out in one of my previous audio files that Ron Paul is involved with the Ludwig von Mises Institute, somebody noticed that a homosexual bishop, Robert Sirico, is involved with a group, Acton.org, and it is also involved with the Mises Institute. It's not a coincidence that Ron Paul is getting tremendous support from Zionist Jews, homosexual bishops, Jeff Rentz, Alex Jones, and other suspicious people. Ron Paul is just another deceptive Zionist puppet. Don't let Ron Paul fool you, and don't fear Zionism. They don't have any magic powers over us. They're a group of selfish, abusive freaks who depend upon murder, blackmail, bribery, and deception. We can beat them by exposing them and their tricks. For example, have you seen the recent news report about a teacher in Sudan who is threatened with death for allowing a student to name a teddy bear Muhammad? I would bet that the Zionist Jews set up that incident and are promoting it in order to create anger towards Muslims. It seems similar to those cartoons of Muhammad that were published in Denmark. As Christopher Bolin showed in a series of articles, those cartoons were coming from Zionists. The Zionists did similar tricks to make Germany look bad prior to World War II. We can defeat these criminals by exposing their tricks. So help me to spread this information. And don't let anybody fool you into quitting. We are beating them. That's why they're struggling so much right now to saturate us with Holocaust propaganda. And it's why Naomi Wolf is trying to frighten us into believing that Bush is another Hitler. The Zionists are on the defensive today. This appears to be the very first time they have ever been on the defensive. The Internet has allowed us to remove their secrecy, and there's no possible way for them to get it back. They have been exposed, and we know who they are. Now we just have to find enough people who want to get rid of this crime network. So try to develop a better attitude. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Learn to accept what you are and try to understand your problems. Don't pretend that you're perfect or that you're something you're not. Encourage discussions and research. Set a good example and inspire other people. Try to counteract the destructive attitudes and the fear that the Zionists are encouraging. Well, that's my talk for today. Until the next time, bye.